This is Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg.
Insurgent trade unionism in South Africa.
We're joined by Luke Sinwell, senior researcher at the University of Johannesburg, whose research includes radical theories and practices of participatory governance, social movements, and housing struggles.
In addition to his book on the Marikana massacre, where South African police gunned down 34 workers, he is co-author of Contesting Transformation, Popular Resistance in 21st Century South Africa.
And, of course, we could mention 100 other periodicals and articles and so on. And thank you for joining us. It's a unique opportunity to have you here. Marikana, a platinum mine, insurgent workers in protest, 34 gunned down. The significance, the departure in the context of South African worker history. Take us behind the rainbow of post-apartheid South Africa.
The Marikana massacre on 16 August 2012. At first, the public didn't really know what had happened because we had seen video footage of a group of mine workers. It looked like on TV that they might have been charging the police, and then we saw people gunned down. The government had been trying to depict this as a tragedy, but in fact, there's a growing realization that this was a premeditated murder. It's been described as a massacre. This has led civil society organizations, NUMSA, the National Union of Metal Workers of South Africa, to de-affiliate with the African National Congress because it views them now as the oppressor. And since then, NUMSA has become the largest trade union in Africa. And they've formed a united front, and they're starting a path towards socialism. They can see that the African National Congress is willing to spill blood in order to preserve capitalist interests.
The Marikana massacre, what I'm interested in is why they rebelled. They were suffering before that for many, many years. Wages, I think, had been going down. What precipitated this, and what led them to break with their own union?
They had been seeing that they were being ignored by the union that they were working with, the National Union of Mine Workers, which fought alongside the workers and communities during the liberation struggle to end apartheid. They were seeing that this was becoming the National Union of Management, the words that some of the activists used. And it's actually a few individuals who took the lead in each of these mines, three largest platinum mines in the world. One can actually trace that this wasn't a spontaneous act. Leaders, individual, rank and file, took the lead and began uniting workers one by one around this wage demand of $12,500, which is about 150% increase of what they had previously been given. The 5,000 rands was about equivalent to $500 per month, and they were trying to get about 150% of that increase.
This is a grassroots movement of militancy that percolates up. Help us understand that process, and it's so unfamiliar to us within the trade union structure here of the actual democratic expression of militancy of the working class. Where does that come from?
It's interesting because even in South Africa, people, the media in particular, but also the government, had been trying to portray this strike as the result of inter-union rivalry between the two unions. That's the Association of Mine Workers and Construction Union. That's the upstart union that was there but didn't have that much control. And then the dominant union at the time, the National Union of Mine Workers. But the organic intellectuals, I'm actually talking about those rank-and-file workers who are enmeshed in the everyday experiences of oppressed people and able to take leadership roles in order to advance their cause.
I'm trying to get a better handle on the situation with KUSATA now that NUMSA and other unions have actually been expelled. Can you explain that more for us?
NUMSA, which again is the largest trade union in Africa, took the decision. KOSATU is a in the Tripartite Alliance along with the South African Communist Party with the ANC. So Kasatu was the workers' arm of the in post-1994. So it was the more left-leaning arm of the Tripartite Alliance. NUMSA took the decision not to leave Kosatu, but to break with the ANC. And then Kosatu saw to it that because they're breaking with the ANC, they couldn't be part of Kosatu. NUMSA had wanted to shift the affiliates within that trade union confederation, which is Kosatu, or Congress of South African Trade Unions, but now they've been expelled because of the center or right wing, somewhat center elements, as opposed to NUMSA as a more left leaning trade union within Kosatu. Now, although we would have wanted Kosatu to shift, in some ways it was bound to happen, and now we see more opportunities on the left because of what NUMSA is doing to unite workers and community-based struggles, although it's in the beginning of actually doing that on the ground.
I guess they're building bridges.
I'd like to ask you about building bridges in that sense, in terms of them going out to not only other unions but also community organizations.
There have been a wide range of community-based organizations that have been putting pressure on the local state for service delivery since the late 90s and early 2000s. That's when people began to see that aspects of this ANC hegemony was beginning to crumble. It's actually when the honeymoon was beginning to subside over time, largely because of the neoliberal development trajectory that the ANC undertook, particularly from 1996, 2 years after liberation. People were affected on the ground around the issue of service delivery, so basic things like water, electricity, and housing. There were dozens and dozens of these community-based organizations that popped up to demand access to housing, water, and electricity, and they had sustained attempts to try to get the local government to deliver these things. And in many instances, they engaged in non-institutionalized means, such as direct action. And some of these community-based organizations gained experience, and they have a wide range of politics as well. So there's some socialist organizations that had been engaging the trade union movement over the last decade or longer. So they had been supporting, but usually the trade union movement would close its doors. Now NUMSA has opened the doors to these people, so it's creating some difficulties here and there in solidifying the politics, but it's creating a situation where for the first time, both sides, the workers and the communities, are actually able to work together on common ground to organize together for an alternative.
When you say organize for an alternative, but is it the growing economic inequality that is essentially spurring these movements forward of insurgent worker groups working in conjunction with support from the community sphere?
And I think some people would argue that it does make sense that when you see people getting richer and richer, like the Occupy movement, 99% versus the 1%, that'll be the main issue that people are taking up. But you tend to see that among different elements of the leadership and not necessarily amongst activists, rank and file, members of community-based organizations, with few exceptions. So South Africa has also been called the protest capital of the world, having the most protests per capita in the last few years. But it's not able to unite around common development program, which fights necessarily against inequality. But the shift of NUMSA and the formation of a United Front for Socialism leads to a situation whereby this group of people in the trade union and as well as the community-based and other left-wing organizations that it's working with can potentially build a movement that will create a socialist future and also explicitly challenge the inequalities in society.
The Marikana massacre, there were 34 miners shot down by the police. Since that point, is there a continuing police brutality against demonstrators and against the working class?
There had been a number of killings prior to and following the Marikana massacre. In some ways, not much has changed, just like not much has changed, at least from my own reading, since Ferguson. But the difference of Marikana and most of these police killings that are happening in South Africa is that it was a planned attempt. The police ordered 4 mortuary vehicles holding 8 people each. There were 34 people killed, so that would have held 32 prior to the actual killing of these people. Also, 4,000 rounds of live ammunition were sent into Marikana prior to the massacre.
Since Ken had brought up the issue of police brutality, I'm most interested in, maybe this is a little departure in the discussion, but there was an effort on the part of our comrades in South Africa to actually protest around the killings here of Michael Brown Jr., of Eric Garner, a response to the police brutality in this country. And I'm interested what was some of the instrumental interest in our South African brothers and sisters responding to those incidents here. Is that also because they see the influence of international capital? Is it because they also see that their own activists are brutalized? Help us understand that. And it's a wonderful thing. I was thrilled and inspired when I saw that degree of solidarity.
When we in South Africa see African Americans killed in the United States, we can feel what's happening there, and we see people around us, usually almost always black people, as in the case in Marikana, 34 black people. Another man who in that demonstration was compared to Eric Garner and Michael Brown, he was a man named Andres Tatane. He was an educator in his community. He was a leader who was putting pressure on the local municipality to deliver water. And what they got was blood. And this man was actually killed. And this was broadcast also around South African television. The man's name is Andres Tatane. He was about 32 years old, a literacy educator and a math teacher in his community. He had created a local library. He's coming from one of the impoverished black areas called Ficksburg in South Africa. And he was gunned down on TV. So one of the things that South Africans were saying there was Andres Tatane is Eric Garner. And, you know, when I arrived here a few weeks ago, I was stunned again to hear about Walter Scott, to hear about Freddie Gray being killed in police custody. We think about Steve Biko, who died in police custody. Mm-hmm. A lot of people consider him to be the godfather of the Black Consciousness Movement. The other similarity that we see is that the police are rarely prosecuted. The killers of Andres Tatane in South Africa, the police, it was caught on film, but they weren't prosecuted. We doubt that the police who killed 34 mine workers in Marikana will actually be prosecuted. So we see the way that racism affects people, black people in particular, around the world. And then we also seek to unite people around a common anti-capitalist alternative, because we can see the ways in which the working class is also affected by capitalism.
And you seem to be bringing up also some of the original demands of the Freedom Charter, which the ANC fought for, getting independence back in the 90s. And that has to do with economic equality, renationalization of the basic industries, and land reform. Can you talk about that?
The main issues amongst working class people, and in South Africa we're primarily talking about working class black people, because the conditions of the vast majority of people haven't changed since 1994. So the racist system of apartheid was buried by the liberation movements, but the system of capitalism remained, and people still don't have access to housing, water, or electricity. So people talk about economic freedom in our lifetime, because it's a thing that people continue to fight against under the current dispensation.
At this point, is there what you would consider to be a hopeful, growing movement that really tackles directly from the working class the issues of capital and certainly international capital?
This is certainly the most important period in post-apartheid South Africa. The first 20 years was a case of ANC hegemony and the masses of people believing that the ANC would deliver to them. Now what you can see is a movement of different political forces moving away from that to form an alternative for international socialism. The importance of what's happening in South Africa extends beyond its borders, as it did during the liberation struggle. What we're seeing is the significance and role of ordinary people in social transformation. That's certainly what we saw in the Platinum Belt with the insurgency of the rank-and-file workers, ordinary people rising up, making changes not only in their lives, but in the broader structures which in some ways dictate what people are able to do.
Luke Sinwell, and what an amazing thing that there were demonstrations abroad in South Africa in solidarity, reminiscent, of course, of the struggle internal to South Africa against police violence, against activism, against violence that took place in response to the killings of Eric Garner, Michael Brown Jr., and so many more that we could add to the list. Luke Sinwell, thank you so much for taking some time to be with us. Reports directly from the insurgent activists in the community sphere, fighting for land, fighting for housing, and fighting for the working conditions and really the power of the working class.
First came the expulsion of the largest trade union in the Federation, NUMSA. Then the Secretary General of COSATU was fired. And now there's talk of a new political organization being formed, and it could bring together the most unlikely bedfellows.
A new workers' movement turned political party would leverage the power of the National Union of Metal Workers of South Africa, NUMSA. At the time that it was expelled from COSATU, NUMSA had the largest following of nearly 400,000 members. Most of them came from the manufacturing sector, but many were disgruntled workers from other areas such as mining and transportation. What appeals to those on the left is that NUMSA challenges the status quo.
NUMSA's leader, Irvin Jim, has often said that workers need their own political organization.
It was high time to organize the working class as a class for itself. And therefore, the working class do need its political organ. In June, we are launching a united front. We remain having the majority of the people of this country at the bottom of the food chain. That need to change.
The 2012 shooting in Marikana was the tipping point in labor relations. A wildcat strike on the platinum mines turned nasty. And from here on, workers wanted bolder representation.
In the short term, we do notice a lot of increase of union competition. Now, that is echoed up and down industry with new unions, you could call them outsider unions, but equally within COSATU, we're seeing disputes between unions like NUMSA and the chemical workers who are used to be all inside the same tent. The toothpaste, as far as I can see it, is out of the tube for COSATU. There's no getting it back.
The mother body doesn't agree.
No. We are not in a crisis. We're just in a situation of reasserting our constitutional hegemony. They expelled NUMSA. Has got a right to have alliances with whosoever they wish to. We know for certain that they are going to contest in the coming municipal elections.
Whilst NUMSA plots its next move, the country's leaders will also have to make theirs. Workers, investors and ratings agencies alike are all waiting to see if any decisive steps are taken to lift the South African economy out of the doldrums. A situation caused by weak growth, the electricity crisis, and labour unrest.
And now South Africa's National Union of Metal Workers President, Irvine Jim, talks about labor in South Africa today.
If we were to take a view about where the Federation come from since it was launched in 1985, I would concur with what you're saying that basically the expulsion of NUMSA is indeed the setback to the working class in the 21st century that we had to deal with. But as everybody would agree, Fidel Castro once warned everyone to say, sometimes great problems deliver great solutions. And in this case, I think what this expulsion exposed is the propaganda that the South African Communist Party and the clique within COSATU and the African National Congress have embarked upon to actually have a project within the Federation to hollow it out of its revolutionary content, its militancy, its independency. You would appreciate that for some time towards the 12th Congress, 11th Congress of COSATU you're speaking about, we have a sustained campaign where basically there has been different views where we, with statistics that are glaring in front of us, we have been able to prove that the National Democratic Revolution, which brought us together, led by the African National Congress in the context of the alliance, has been basically off track. In that conference, for the first time in history, unprecedented, we had a situation where Zwelinze Mavavi presented a report which was scientific about the state and conditions of the working class in the country. There were those unions, including NUMSA, who firmly believed that indeed the National Democratic Revolution was off track. There was deepening inequality, poverty, unemployment, which was worsening in the country with serious levels of deindustrialization. And there were those who basically we took a very firm stance that, look, if you were to say that, you're basically undermining the African National Congress. And we saw the Secretary General of the ANC taking the platform, suggesting in a conference of workers that workers must not endorse the report. He was followed by the South African Communist Party, Solly Mapaile. We had to think on our feet. And we had to defend a report which was a product of all CCs, because Zwelinze Mavavi preparing that report, he basically consulted all affiliates, and we all agreed that that was the report that was to be debated in that conference. After that, we have to be confronted with a situation where now we must roll out a program. I think we can say that the 11th Congress of COSATU was indeed a watershed congress in the sense that it emerged with a solid program, campaigns. We needed to create what we called a Freedom Charter moment. Some called it a Lula moment, where we said we must go to the street to fight for full implementation of the Freedom Charter, to challenge the Reserve Bank focus on inflation targeting instead of focusing on job creation, to make sure that the whole question of ownership and control of the economy is basically being addressed. And then Sthumo Dlamini, in opening the first CC, he refused that we can have a program that can be implemented, because he argued that there were those affiliates who basically opposed his election. We said, sorry, President, yes, that was the case, because we had a problem with you. There's always a consistent two voices in the Federation. You got Zwelinze Mavavi, who continue to champion the interests of the working class, but you continue not being sure whether you speak for workers, whether you speak for the SACP, whether you speak for the ANC. And I mean, we persuaded him to say, listen, we must accept that workers have spoken. You are all back into the leadership. Lead us in implementing the program. So I do want to argue that the issue of NUMSA's expulsion doesn't start with the NUMSA in 2013, December, having taken those resolutions. In fact, when we realized that indeed they were not prepared to implement the program of the Federation, one-third of COSATU affiliates, following the constitution of COSATU, they basically petitioned the president of COSATU. And according to that constitution, once he is petitioned, all what he need to do is to convene the special congress, give a notice for 14 days, something he completely refused to execute. And as such, NUMSA, when we finally went to our own special national congress, and there were glaring issues that made us to take the resolution that have led to our expulsion. The first one, the ANC adoption of the National Development Plan was the last straw for us, in the sense that we were there, we were invited. In fact, when the ANC said publicly it is calling for Festival of Ideas, it's inviting us to a national policy conference, we participated in that national policy conference, and two commissions basically endorsed that we must nationalize strategic minerals. In other words, we must address issues of ownership and control of the economy and champion manufacturing and industrialization. In a distance from those commissions to the plenary, the leadership of the ANC unilaterally outside a democratic process, both in the ANC and in the alliance, they basically added condition to change those resolutions that nationalization can only happen if it is appropriate to do so, if there is a balance of evidence to do so. And we were shocked. And we saw people physically beating each other up in that national policy conference. In Mangaung, basically all what the president of the ANC suggested was that, listen, the NDP is a serious document. It must be, that conference cannot end. And we debated, we rejected the NDP, and we saw people pushing for its adoption, and it was adopted without any consultation of the alliance. Secondly, all everything else that had to do with nationalization, they pressed delete control. It was removed, and this was done by leadership. And as we were going to our own special national congress, we had to honestly reflect on the adoption of a neoliberal agenda, which was the NDP, which maintained the status quo of the dominance of white monopoly capital in the economy, privatization of roads, we got e-tolls in Johannesburg, refusal to ban labor brokers, introduction unilaterally of youth wage subsidy, where basically the job of workers who have been in the industry are under threat, and metal workers decided. And they didn't say those who like to vote for the ANC must not. They simply said their union will not spend their dues in campaigning for the ANC. Secondly, they said because Tumo Dlamini has failed to convene the Special National Congress, we should not be paying dues. And I must tell you that we didn't implement that resolution, but we are expelled.
You continue to pay your dues.
We are an affiliate in good standing. Now we are expelled. But we continue to pay the dues. Secondly, workers said we should march to COSATU. We didn't march to COSATU. Thirdly, we said we shall not continue to pay a political levy to a communist party that has gone public to suggest that it will directly intervene in COSATU. It defined NUMSA and those who want an independent federation as a small lingering irritation which they will have that they have identified, they will isolate and basically liquidate.
Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.